You're now listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.
Hello, Colorado. This is the Engage the Rockies podcast. I am your host, Jarvis Caldwell, Executive Director of Engage the Rockies. Today's episode, we're talking about school safety and school security, but more specifically, because school safety and school security is multifaceted and it involves a lot of different factors in it. What we're talking about today is arming staff and arming teachers, administrators, and just doing what we can to keep our students as safe as possible at school. And today's guest is Laura Carno. And when I was looking for a guest to discuss this issue, I can't think of anybody in the state more qualified to talk about this issue. And that's because Laura is the founder and board president of FASTER Colorado. FASTER stands for Faculty Administrator Safety Training and Emergency Response. They're an organization dedicated to keeping children safe while they're at school. FASTER supports arming teachers, staff, and administrators by offering world-class firearm and emergency response training. Laura, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And as always, I like to do disclosures, full disclosures for transparency. So I've mentioned before on this podcast that I sit on the board of directors for a charter school in Colorado Springs, and we have sent some of our staff members through FASTER Colorado. And I will say that they had nothing but great reviews and comments and great experiences from going through FASTER. So with that disclosure out of the way, Laura, we're going to move on to, I've got a few questions here for you today to talk about this aspect of school safety and security. So big picture, you founded FASTER Colorado. Why did you feel the need to start FASTER Colorado?
Yeah, so this goes back a number of years. I went to a class in Ohio that was put on by a group called FASTER Saves Lives. And just some friends that were part of starting up that organization, they said, you should see what we're doing out here. I went to a FASTER class out there and I was blown away. I don't have a lot of teachers in my family. And so to be at this class with teachers and coaches and janitors and principals, and to a person, every one of them would die to protect the children in their schools. Mm-hmm. And they're just looking for a chance to protect the children and live. And so it really changed my life. So I came back to Colorado. I thought that we were going to have to change our laws here, not knowing that there's already a law on the books that's like over 20 years old now, mm-hmm. that allowed for school boards and charter school boards to designate armed staff. But what I found is that there was no organized training program that brought really good training to these armed schools. And so we assembled a group of instructors. They're all active duty law enforcement and first responder instructors. We train at all law enforcement training facilities. We wanted to bring the best possible training to folks so that if, God forbid, something happens on one of these campuses, they're in the best possible position to save lives.
That's awesome. Yeah, I had no idea about that. So it was actually something that you saw in Ohio. So are you guys a branch of the Ohio branch, or you're your own entity?
Yeah, we're our own entity. We're a 501c3 here in Colorado. What we did, though, is I love the FASTER name. And in order to, because, and here's why, it reminds us that the faster we stop the killing and the faster we stop the bleeding, the fewer people that are going to die. So they licensed the name FASTER to me for $0. And in our first year, some of the guys from Ohio came out, our new instructors came out. They co-taught the class to make sure that they were of the right quality, and you know, clearly they are, so that we could use that name. And so we're, I would call them the mothership. They help other states get started, but we run as a separate organization, independent from them.
I did not know that. That's great to know. Thank you.
That's what we're here for, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so roughly how many teachers, administrators, staff have been trained since you started FASTER in, I believe, 2017, correct?
Yeah, 2017. Mm-hmm. So we are going into our eighth training year this year.
Yeah.
So we are working with schools in 41 of Colorado's districts, and there are 178 school districts in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with schools in 41 of those.
Yeah.
And we're at right about 400 people who have come through our classes over the years. So as
That's awesome.
We're talking right now, there mm-hmm. are 400 people out there protecting our school children. And we're very happy to be a part of that because we think it absolutely makes schools safer.
Absolutely. So when you talk about the training for the staff, what does training look like for those that go through FASTER? And I mean, that's kind of, you know, number of days, kind of what are the qualifications? Who's training them? Is it you training them? Do you have staff members? Kind of give us a background on that, what that looks like.
Sure thing. And let me put the training in context mm-hmm. because there's a whole lot that happens before the training happens. So yeah. a school district or a charter school decides that they want to do this. Mm-hmm. And by the way, these are very parent-driven policies. Sometimes right. school boards come up with this on their own, but typically it's because there was an incident or parents are aware of an incident or parents are aware of things going on in other districts and they want to know mm-hmm. what's going on. So there's that part of it. They talk about the policy. They've got to pass some resolutions. Your school board attorney is typically involved in all of this and that kind of mm-hmm. thing. And then they go through a selection process. So anybody okay. who's going to be an armed staff member on a campus is hand selected. They are a volunteer and they go through a vetting process. Mm-hmm. And we can hook them up with people who've done the vetting processes at their school district before so that they don't have to, you know, start from ground zero. And then they have to get some preparatory training before they come to our level one class. Mm-hmm. And their insurance policies, when you add an armed staff component to your security team, your insurance company is going to say, you need to send them to this training. We mm-hmm. actually require them to go to training before they come to the training that's required by their insurance. So we essentially take care of that annual requirement that their insurance company requires. They've got training before that, and then most school boards are requiring additional training in between their annual training. So I just want to mm-hmm. place that in context.
Yeah.
Because when I tell you the hours, that's not all they do. There's a lot more that goes into that. So yeah. our level one training, which takes them from not caring to caring for their first year, mm-hmm. that is a 24-hour class. Mm-hmm. And it, again, meets their insurance requirements. And we also exceed it a little bit. We add a stop the bleed component. So mm-hmm. a little bit of medical training specific to gunshot wounds. Mm-hmm. And then we also, part of the requirement is that they pass the POST qualification, and POST is Peace Officer Standards and Training. And that's the test that law enforcement has to pass to get out of the academy and that they have mm-hmm. to requalify for every year. Mm-hmm. So we have that same test, which is required by the insurance company, but we add two additional shots to that and they have to pass at 100%. So it was important to us that we make it more difficult because mm-hmm. the community is rightly concerned if there are armed staff members in school, how well trained are they? And mm-hmm. we wanted it to be very clear that they're very well trained. You asked about who's training them. Am I training them? No, I am mm-hmm. not an instructor.
Okay.
I run this program. As you mentioned, I founded it and I'm the board president. Mm-hmm. So we help schools get started. I talk to the media about this. I raise all of the money for the organization. So those are the things I do. We brought to the party the best instructors that we have in Colorado. Our lead instructor is an academy director for a metro area sheriff's office. He's our lead instructor. So he is in charge of training the new recruits. They also do the in-service training for everything that cops do in all year long for training, their annual requalifications, all that kind of stuff. And all of our instructors, save one, are active duty law enforcement instructors. The one who isn't, he's a battalion chief for a Northern Colorado area fire service. He is on the fire service response team for active shooter. He's a firearms instructor, but he does all of our medical training. And he's a three-time combat veteran, Marine veteran in Iraq. He is a as good as any of the guys that are that are active duty law enforcement, but he also brings that medical component, which is good to have taught throughout, not just for the medical training.
Yeah, and I I'm glad you brought this part up, because when I talk to people about our armed staff and about the training they go through, you know, I always say to them, I go, this is actually a higher standard than what our local police department goes through. And I always kind of get that, like, that look on their face, like, really? And I'm like, no, really. Like, because they go through that same thing that they have to go through and then some. And, you know, I really love the fact that you guys add the component of the stop the bleed, because, you know, it's not just about stopping the threat. You want to stop the threat right away. But then you need to be able to tend to anyone who may be injured while you're waiting for certain services. And
can I just add something to you know, all of the training and all of that kind of stuff. When people say that, how can they be as well trained as law enforcement? There are a whole lot of things that law enforcement learns that these guys are not going to have to learn. They don't have to, you know, chalk out a traffic accident scene, and they aren't going to serve search warrants for drug houses. There are a ton of things that law enforcement does that, that these guys will never have to do. In the two narrow skill sets of stopping the killing and stopping the bleeding, it is the exact same skill set that is learned by law enforcement. So, and we hear that a lot too. Well, academies take months. You know, let's just be very clear on what this is, because these folks have a job. They are, you know, they're the janitor or the coach or the principal or the superintendent. So, you know, they don't have to do all of those other things.
Yeah. And another point that you brought up that I think is really important is that, you know, this is for schools that implement this, this is completely volunteer. So one of the things that we did when we implemented it, it was like, you have to be okay with doing it. Obviously you have to volunteer and want to do it. And I can give you an example. Like we had a few people in the school, that I guess you could say met the qualifications for what we were requiring. And they said, you know, I can't do it because they didn't have the temperament for it, or they're just like, I couldn't bring myself to having to, you know, stop potentially a student if a student was the threat. And we were like, nope, that's fine. That's if you're having those doubts, then we don't want you to do it. And so
And that's where we're looking at people who self-select out, which is just as important as the people who self-select in. And you're right and they're right. The chances that a perpetrator who comes on campus meaning to do harm, it's probably going to be somebody they know. It's probably going to be a student. And the mindset differential that you're talking about is some people can't separate this is a person I know versus I got to save all these people behind me. And that is a mindset difference. And we start our level one class with mindset training. Most people, by the time they get to us, have already gone through the could I do it, could I not do it before they get to us. But we want to start this class with you got to understand what you're signing up for, because it's not pretty. It's not something anybody wants to think about, but if we don't look at these kind of policies, the only choice these people have is to put their bodies between bullets and children. And that is not a choice. These are people who love these kids. They usually call them my kids, even though they didn't birth all these children, they feel a sense of responsibility. They should have an opportunity to stop the threat so that zero children get harmed and have a chance themselves to go home to their own families that night.
Absolutely. And I wanted to add another point to what you're saying. It went, at least for our school, we don't just send them through faster one time and say, okay, that's it. That's all the training they need. So we made a decision as a school we actually send them through quarterly, we have quarterly training requirements for them. So whether that's, you know, you have to, you know, go to the firing range or the shooting range, you know, and shoot 200, 300 rounds per quarter, or however it is. I don't have the specific, in front of me, but it's, we make them continue to train year round so that they don't get rusty. And I don't think that's necessarily a requirement, but we want to make sure that, you know, because of the responsibility that this person has, that they're continually training. And I think most police departments, they only require like an annual training. Like you have to qualify once a year or something like that. So we're like, you know what, we're going to go with what Faster does, and we're going to require even more, because of the sensitivity of this whole issue. So we're like, okay, once a quarter. And we pay for the ammunition. We put it in our budget. So we're like, okay, if we're requiring you to shoot 200 rounds per quarter, 300 rounds per quarter, we're actually going to put it in our budget to make sure that that's paid for, because we all know ammo's not cheap nowadays.
Yeah. And one of the things we've seen in the last 8 years, and I'm glad you brought this up, is when we first got started, and we don't push any of these policies. These are policies that school boards and charter school boards put in place. That's not part of what we do. But a lot of people talk to us about what they're doing, so we're kind of this big repository of information on what's going on out there. Eight years ago when we started, there was less of what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now what we're seeing is it's very common, if not universal, to say you got to go to your annual training, and then monthly we want you doing this, quarterly we want you doing this. More and more school districts are paying for a gym membership, a membership to a shooting range,
to the range.
To your point, you know, paying for all that practice ammo. So we're seeing school boards far exceed not just what any law says they need to do, but what the insurance company says they need to do. And that's because many school board members come to our training to observe it, and they go, holy cow, this is not going out into my uncle's backyard and plinking. Right. This is serious law enforcement level training. Yeah. And they sit through our mindset training, and it gives them that level of seriousness that helps them remember this isn't annual. This is far more than annual.
When I talked to some of our staff members that went through your training, and they were telling me everything they did, whether it was, I'm not sure what level this was, but it was like room clearing and fixing jams and then shooting. I was like, well, I was in the military for 10 years. Now I was in the Air Force, so I wasn't like a Marine or anything. But when they explained to me what they went through with Faster, I was like, that's actually a higher level than what I ever went through in the Air Force. Because when you go through qualification in the Air Force, it's like you have some practice shots. You have like 30 rounds of practice shots, and then you do like 50 rounds of qualifying. But the standard's like really low. You only have to hit the target like 25 out of 50 times or something at different ranges. and they're not making you clear rooms. They're not making you, they teach you how to fix a jam on like an M16 or like a 9mm Beretta, but that's not actually part. You don't actually have to pass that in order to qualify. So when they explained to me what Faster makes them do, I was like, man, you're better qualified than I am. And I went through the military for 10 years. So,
That's a really good point. And those room clearances and the SWAT type tactics, those come into the higher level classes, which are done in subsequent years after that initial year.
Right.
But if folks think about how long it takes to get law enforcement to a scene. So the early adopters to this policy were rural schools, because they've got maybe a half hour if they're lucky till law enforcement's going to get there. Right. But there were some recent numbers that came out of Colorado Springs Police Department that had it in like the 11 minute range. And hopefully it would be faster than that in the case of an active shooter. But for goodness sakes, if you've got 11 minutes, there's some work to get done if somebody is actively killing people. And so these are skills that are critical. Because I've had folks, the reason I brought this up is I've had folks say, well, you just need them to stop the killer until the cops get there. Yeah, but we don't know how much work is going to need to be done. Are there more than one shooter? Right. Do you have shooting going on in multiple places? There's a lot of potential life-saving work that needs to be done. And, you know, yes, we absolutely do that training. And the great thing about our instructors, they, you know, I mentioned they do police academies and that sort of thing, but all of them are either currently on SWAT teams, have been on SWAT teams. So there is no end to the, to the instruction that can be done. And actually in our level 3 and 4 class, we actually do part of that in a school. With real hallways and real echoes. And if you hear gunshots in a cinder block building, for example, where are they coming from? It's echoing everywhere. There's just a lot of reality based training that can be done from that standpoint too.
Excellent. Okay. So we talked about the implementation and what the training looked like. So for schools that already have SROs and those are school resource officers. Is it encouraged for them to have trained members as well?
Yeah. So let me tell you what we hear from school resource officers. And for folks that don't know, they are a member of your local community's law enforcement, could be a police officer, could be a sheriff's deputy, but they are fully sworn law enforcement uniformed, all that stuff. I'll tell you what we hear from school resource officers, and we've had some that have come through our class and said, whoa, that is serious training. They know that they can't be everywhere. So if you are in a school district that has school resource officers, maybe there's an SRO dedicated to high schools. They are shared between middle schools. They are shared between even more elementary schools. So ask those questions. But what we hear from SROs is the school is too big. I cannot cover the whole thing. Right. And while there have been zero school shootings in schools that have armed staff, there have been school shootings in schools with school resource officers. Now, it never starts right in front of the SRO because the killer isn't going to start his killing right in front of somebody he knows who can stop him. And in fact, the SRO is typically very far away. In the Arapahoe High School shooting, it took the SRO 46 seconds to sprint from where he was to the library where it was happening. And nobody's saying, hey, you were too slow. He sprinted, got there as soon as he could. But Claire Davis had already been shot and subsequently lost her life. Yeah. One child is one child too many. We want to lose zero children. We want zero children shot. But had somebody closer to the point of attack been armed in a concealed fashion that nobody knew was there, potentially that person could have stopped it sooner than when that SRO arrived.
Yeah. And you know, that's an important point because obviously when you have an SRO there, it's an armed security guard. They have usually a badge and they're open carrying. So something that our school did is we said, listen, we actually don't want people to know who's carrying. Like, so only a select, very small handful of people in the school actually know who is concealed carrying, who's actually went through the faster training. And we do that on purpose. Like, we don't want to make them a target and we don't want them to stand out in that way. So they, again, like the executive director, some of the board members, we know who's concealed carrying as far as the staff members, but it's not a thing. We don't put out a release and say, hey, these are all the people. And we don't even release the exact number of people who went through the training. And so we do that on purpose. So they are not targets. If something would happen.
And that's the norm that we have heard in faster trained schools for all of the exact reasons you're talking about. And we don't want the bad guys to know where they are going to be stopped because they'll go somewhere else to start. Right. And the goal is zero injuries, zero life lost, zero school shootings. And, you know, I think it's a deterrent effect when people know that a school or a district is has concealed carry armed staff. That's a deterrent. If you're a bad guy, you're just going to go somewhere else where you think you have a better chance of having more time to commit your crimes.
Yeah, the first thing we did when we implemented it was we had really big signs. I think they're white signs with red lettering, and it was like armed staff, you know, you know, will protect children or something like that, you know. So, and they're really big, and we put them on the front of the school to let anybody coming up to the school know. And like you said, it that the sign alone may be enough. Sure. I mean, you would hope it's enough, obviously. You brought up a couple other points I'm just going to hit really quick that's important. So SROs can't be everywhere at once. They may be at lunch. They may be out that day. They may be sick or something. And depending if you go through a contracting company, a security company, a lot of times if your SRO has to miss that day for whatever reason, they'll try to backfill it. But like a school like ours, we hire him, our staff member, our security member directly. So if for some reason he's not there that day, then he's not there that day. And so, you know, our armed staff kind of backfill that, if that makes sense. So there, it's like, okay,
he's
at a doctor's appointment. It's okay because we still have security through our staff members.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to say the other thing in rural areas, because I know your podcast gets listened to all over the state. In rural areas, there might be a school resource officer in a small district who is subject to being pulled by the sheriff's office when something happens. So if you picture the vast highways out there in county roads out in rural Colorado, you could have a traffic accident that the SRO gets pulled for because we need all kinds of help at a traffic accident that's in the middle of nowhere. Right. And so, you know, that person can get pulled from the school, and now we have zero coverage unless, again, there's armed staff, which we see this combination a lot. And we like that because the SRO can do other things. You know, if there's a fight, if there's a theft, if there are all kinds of other things that can happen in a school, your armed staff are not dealing with that.
Yeah. And I've talked specifically with a lot of rural legislators, and they specifically talk about like, hey, the closest police department is like 40 minutes away, 45 minutes away, which is what you mentioned earlier. And they're like, so our schools, especially out like on the Western Slope, they're like, they really rely on having these armed staff members for protection. I've just got a couple more questions. I've got one more question and then just a couple updates for people. So they know what's going on at the legislature.
Sure.
And you've kind of touched on this, which was, about has anybody who's gone through FASTER stopped an active shooter?
So what we don't have is, a active shooter coming in with a rifle out and an armed staff member shooting and stopping them. We don't have any of that nationwide, actually. What we do have is a whole lot of stories about somebody who's nosing around, poking around, trying to figure out what the security is here, being told, yes, there are armed staff here. We definitely have seen that. It's not stuff you're going to read in the papers. And somebody who came to a level 2 class last year told us a story of something that happened on his rural campus after he had gone through level 1. And he credited our training with his decision not to shoot the person when he was legally, there would have been legal justification for it. And it was somebody who came onto campus with a gun, and can't remember now if it was a machete or an axe. It was some random edged weapon. But he was looking for suicide by cop. He had broken up with his girlfriend. He was distraught. They did catch up with him after he left the campus without harming anybody because of a very quick reaction by an armed staffer. But they caught up with him, arrested him, and he said that that was what his intent was. So did the armed staffer stop something that could have resulted in the death of students? We don't know because it didn't play out without the intervention of the staff member. But we have a very good sense that it had a good outcome and no student had to see any of that violence happen, which is a good outcome when you don't change children forever.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I would always just say like the absence of having someone who went through FASTER not stopping a shooter, it doesn't mean that, if anything, to me, that means that FASTER is actually working, because again,
absolutely,
like our school that sent teachers or administrators through faster, we put up the signs, and that's a deterrent right there. And so, 100%. You know, how do you measure something that didn't happen? Right.
Exactly. Because yeah. you can't play out the A and B scenarios. And right. What we have seen over the last 8 years is, so some schools just replace the gun-free zone decal on right. their doors with something that says armed staff, mm-hmm. all the way up to big signs. Mm-hmm. What the trend that we're seeing is more schools are comfortable with the big sign, and yeah. the schools that started out with the big signs are saying, we want bigger signs that can be seen from the highway.
Right.
And we want to be more direct in our, right. In our language that, mm-hmm. you know, we will take lethal action to protect all these children.
Yeah.
And, and whatever school boards decide, you know, we're agnostic to that. We're still going to right. train the people who come our way.
Yeah, that was a decision that we had to deliberate on as a school board. Is, you know, is this something that we just want to put out in an email and announce to our parents about it, or is this something that we want to, you know, really embrace it? And my position was, I say we embrace it and we brag about how safe of a school we are, and we own it. And because as a parent, you know, I have two kids in elementary school, and I'm like, you know, school safety is important. You know, it's in the back of every parent's mind when you send your kid off every day. You know, yep. it's almost subconscious. You can't help but think, you yep. know, about their safety when you send them off every day. And so I'm like, you know, as a school board member, my position is embrace that you are the safest school around, you know what I mean? And yep, almost use exactly. that as, like recruiting, you know, because every parent cares about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we definitely hear from mm-hmm. schools that when they implemented the policy, some parents said, I will never have my child there, and mm-hmm. decide to take their child somewhere else, which is certainly yeah. their right. It's their child. But every school tells us that they have more incoming students than outgoing mm-hmm. students because of right. exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Last two questions for you, Laura. And I, sure. again, I appreciate your time. So we're just going to do some updates, some legislative updates, because session is going on right now. We're a little bit past the halfway point. And so, yes. 120 days is way too long for a legislative session.
Gosh.
It's ridiculous. There's some states that have like 30 days, you know, we have almost half a year. It's crazy. Okay. So do you have an update on what they call, and I don't have the bill number here, the sensitive spaces bill that would have banned.
Yeah, I have the bill number in my head.
Okay.
So yeah, sensitive spaces, there's two bills we're looking at this year. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is the first year we've ever even thought of, and had to hire a lobbyist, which is just crazy.
Right.
A training organization, a training right. nonprofit.
Right.
Yeah. So sensitive spaces, is Senate Bill 131. And this mm-hmm. was a reaction to the Bruin Supreme Court decision. Mm-hmm. New York and California came out with these sensitive spaces bills saying, if we're going to be stuck with the Supreme Court saying that people get to carry, we're going to carve out a bunch of places they can't and call them sensitive spaces. Mm-hmm. So Senate Bill 131 went through the Senate committee, just passed the Senate floor yesterday. It is what's called a strike below amendment, which means that they gutted the whole thing, struck yeah. everything below a certain line, and right. They rewrote the bill for your listeners that don't follow such things.
Yeah.
And so they reduced the number of sensitive spaces from about 20 to a small handful, including legislators at the state capitol, including institutions of higher education. So not content to leave it to the CU Board of Regents and those governing organizations over those institutions, which would include the CU system, private colleges, the community college system, all of that. They're just going to make that blanket policy. Well, our law today for all higher ed campuses is if you have a concealed carry permit and you are there, whether you're mm-hmm. an instructor, a student, or you're going to see a performance or a play or something, mm-hmm. you can carry a firearm just like you could at the grocery
right.
store. So they're trying to make that go away. Even though there's not a law making anybody in those situations on higher ed campuses go through training, Many higher ed faculty have sought out this training on their own because they know that college campuses are a problem.
Yeah.
Unsafe. So that's one that we're looking at. Again, it just passed the Senate floor. It's going to go over to the House. My guess is, just like the sensitive spaces legislation in California and New York, I think this is going to end up at the Supreme Court because it flies in the face of Bruin. Right. The other one you're probably going to ask me about is the so-called school safety measures.
That's right.
Bill. Okay, yep. That's House Bill 1310 for those following. So it was originally scheduled for its first committee last month. It got booted from the committee calendar because of some questions that the committee chair had for the bill sponsor that weren't being answered to her satisfaction. So that has now been rescheduled for April the 11th. So that's coming right up. So, and if folks want to follow all of the updates, especially on those two bills, our website, fastercolorado.org, you can sign up for our newsletters. Those started out to be monthly newsletters, but there have been so many legislative updates that we have needed to keep people apprised of. They have been a little bit more like weekly. For example, 2 days ago, I sent one out saying, this is now rescheduled for April 18th. Yesterday, they rescheduled it for the 11th. So I need to send out another email when you and I are done talking to get everybody updated on that. But that's the best place to make sure that you're keeping up to date on that. Again, fastercolorado.org to get those emails. I also, as soon as I post an email, I post it on our social media, which are the same name on Facebook and Twitter, or X, we call it these days.
I still call it Twitter.
I know.
I will always call it Twitter.
Yes. It's like Mile High Stadium.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, thank you for that update. And actually, when I was going to close out here, I was going to ask you where people could go to find out. And so just for one last time, you said fastercolorado.org.
Yes, fastercolorado.org. Mm-hmm. You can send us a note there. You can sign up for our newsletter, see our any recent updates we have there.
Yeah.
Also, if folks wanted to donate, we are a 501c3. Mm-hmm. We raise money so that schools in their first year, when they typically don't, haven't thought of their budget, we can help get them through with some partial scholarships. Yeah. We don't want anybody to have to forego this world-class life-saving training just because they didn't budget for it last year.
Right. Understood. And so if a parent is listening to this podcast right now and maybe their kids are in a charter school or just a regular district-run school and they don't have this, but the parents are interested in it, they can get more information through there. Can they reach out to you guys and say, hey, look, I want to push this for my school, but I don't know what to say to the board directors. You know, can you give me information for it? They can do that through you guys.
Absolutely. Contact us at our website and they'll either hear from me or one of our two retired superintendents who, when they were not retired, they had great armed programs going on at their school. They can help connect them with other parents who we might have also heard from in that school district. So they can join forces and have a little bit more of a unified front. And we can help get them on their way.
Excellent. Well, Laura, thank you so much again for taking the time to talk about this. It's, you know, protecting the most vulnerable, protecting the kids, the ones we love the most. I literally can't think of something more important than that. My kids are my entire life, and keeping them safe. There's nothing I care about more. And I think every parent feels that way. So we really appreciate what you do. Again, if the audience, if you guys appreciate this, this episode, please, you know, like, subscribe, share it, go check out Faster Colorado and find out more. And if this is something that you don't have in your district yet, but you're interested in it, you know, Laura can help you out with that. So again, Laura, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon. Maybe we'll bring you back in a few months and get an update on what actually happened in the legislature and see what passed and what didn't pass. Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.